All right. Well, today is, of course, this week is the season in which we talk about being thankful and gratitude, and that's what Thanksgiving is all about. So this week and next week, we thought we would talk around this theme, thankfulness. And in particular, last week, as you remember, we were talking about faith and expectation. And faith and expectation, I was saying, is a slippery slope to having faith and expectation that God is going to do something for you, and then having a feeling of entitlement, like you deserve something or God owes you for all the good that you've done in your life. And so what I was saying last week was that thankfulness and gratitude is the antidote to that feeling of entitlement. And so we wanted to talk about thankfulness. And one word I just want to start with, and I think this is an important word to investigate as we think about what it means to be thankful, is it's kind of an ugly word, and I put it up here on the screen, is being ingrateful. Ingrateful. And that's a word that stings. It hurts. And I think that, ingrateful. Ingratitude, as I'm staring at the word. Ingratitude was the word I meant to say. Ingratitude, it's the opposite of what we expect. It's the opposite of what we think it is that we deserve. You do something for somebody. You set them up for success. You do something to boost them or move them along in life. You sacrifice for them. You raise them. You hire them. You marry them. And, you feel as though you are owed something in response. And when they don't acknowledge you or when they don't return with a thanks, it stings. It hurts. It's hard oftentimes for us to adjust to and or to deal with. And, we've been on both sides of this, I think. I think there's all sorts of miscommunications that take place in relationships where we feel as though somebody is acting ungrateful for the things that we have done for them. And also, we have been on the side of a person complaining to us that we just take them for granted and we never thank them for anything. And so we've experienced, I think, most of us in this room, both sides of that particular issue. Just last night, I was realizing my son Josiah and I had this miscommunication where I had told him through text, I said, we were with our younger daughter at a basketball tournament. We were going to be gone all day, and our younger son Judah was in the house. And so we said to him, hey, we're going to send you $40. You can put some gas in your tank, right? Which is a good thing. And you can take your brother out to lunch. And what we asked him to do was just, hey, spend some time with your younger brother, which he did because he's a good son. And scoring points with him, right? Scoring points. But when I got home, we kind of went back and forth because he was asking me for another favor. And he said, well, I hung out with Judah all day. I did this favor for you. And I said, you did a favor for me? I sent you $40. That was a favor for you. Where are we going back and forth with this ingratitude, right? And of course, the right answer in that situation was, hey, Josiah, I'm really grateful that you're a good big brother, right? That you spend time with your younger brother. And the response for him was probably more, hey, Dad, I'm really grateful to you for all your provision in my life. But it's just not the way it works, is it? We go back and forth, and we have all sorts of ingratitude, and we don't really acknowledge the things that people do for us all the time. But here's the thing about thankfulness and about gratitude. The recipient of whatever favor was done or good deed was done is always aware. It's the person who is ungrateful that is rarely aware that they have skipped something or miss something altogether. So can you ever think of a time in your life where you were ungrateful? In fact, maybe you should just rewind back to when you were 13, right? Because that was probably the age where a lot of it was going on. But if you've ever been ungrateful before, here's the confusing part. Life is going along. Everything is going swell. You think everything is great with your relationships. And then all of a sudden, somebody has some sort of confrontational conversation with you where they say something along the lines of, you just never appreciate anything that I do, or this is a one-sided relationship, or you take me for granted, or one of these kinds of phrases. There's many ways that we go on to describe it, and it caught you off guard because you were totally unaware that this person felt as though you were being ungrateful, because that's the nature of ingratitude, is it eludes us that we are being ungrateful. Like, we truly, really are taking it for granted what a person has done for us. And so, you know, maybe you thought that you were expressing it. And I think this is the way that it works a lot of times, is it's not as though we are ungrateful. People do things for us, wonderful things, maybe make all kinds of sacrifices for us in our lives. And we think to ourselves, wow, I'm really grateful for that person. I'm really grateful for what they did. I'm really grateful for the sacrifices that they made. But we never express it, right? We keep it inside. We keep it to the level of the thought life, and it never comes out. And so the problem then becomes, well, that unexpressed gratitude that you might feel is expressed and communicated to them as ingratitude. Here, I better read the phrase that I put up there. Unexpressed gratitude is communicated as ingratitude, right? And this is just the reality. When you don't express it, when you don't get it out there, there's a message that's being communicated to the person. It's the exact opposite of what you genuinely feel. You genuinely feel grateful, and yet because you have not expressed it, it's communicated to them in a way that makes them feel terrible. And so it's a real problem when it comes to gratitude and ingratitude. And I think what happens is that gratitude and ingratitude, either of the two, because it cuts both ways, they really determine the direction of our relationships, the health of our relationships. And here's what I mean by that. You and I would say, are willing to continue entrusting ourselves in all of our relationships on a basis of whether or not we feel a sense of gratitude. We feel a sense of, hey, there is a reasonable reason why I'm pouring out myself in this relationship, and this person is genuinely grateful for it, they recognize it, and there's this give and take that we experience. And I know this sounds as though it's selfish, right? I mean, because there is this sense in which, as parents, you know, you're taking care of a two-year-old who's incapable of expressing gratitude to you. Well, I shouldn't say incapable. They start to learn along the way, but there are lessons. You almost have to teach them what it means to be grateful, right? And to say thank you and to do all these kinds of things. Maybe they crack a smile or do something funny that somehow you have to kind of, in your mind, play this mental gymnastic game where that's the gratitude that I get for all this sacrifice that I'm making. But if there's a person in my life that I feel is ungrateful for the efforts that I've made, or a family member that I feel as though is taking me for granted, the tendency that I will have is to, and that you will have, is to pull away from that relationship for fear that we are going to be taken advantage of. Because there's only so much of my life that I can pour out for another person who's totally ungrateful and who can't even recognize what it is that I'm doing. And here's why this is such a big deal. Oftentimes, we are unaware that the person is feeling this. We're unaware that they're feeling as though we are ungrateful. Because, and here's the other thing, nobody wants to be the person that says, well, can't you just say thank you? You know, nobody wants to come up to that person and say, well, aren't you grateful for all the things that I do in your life? You know, you don't want to have that kind of conversation. Although oftentimes relationships, it leads to that conversation. But if these feelings of gratitude go unexpressed for a long period of time, we can drive people right out of our lives. We can drive people out of relationship with us. We can even drive people right out of our homes. And ingratitude is often the source of relational strife in our lives. When we don't communicate our gratefulness for the people that God has placed in our lives and the things that they have done for us, it can create all sorts of havoc in our relationships. So I want to take you to a story in the Gospels, and it's a story about Jesus, and it's not a parable, it's a true story, something that happened in the course of his ministry. And it comes out of the Gospel of Luke. And you know, the interesting thing about Luke is Luke was a unique writer of the scriptures. He lived at the time of Jesus, and so he was alive at the time that Jesus was alive. We don't know for sure if he met him but he certainly heard a great deal about him from eyewitnesses. And so Luke had heard so many stories about Jesus. He says at the beginning of his gospel, he says, I took careful account to ask people and to hear their accounts of the things that happened. And so he sought to create a chronological storyline of what happened in Jesus' ministry from the beginning all the way to the end. And so, in fact, one of the great Christmas stories about the shepherds in the field, we get that from Luke, and it's a beautiful, wonderful story. And so, but in Luke chapter 17, he tells the story of Jesus, and it's a story in which Jesus asks a critical question that gets to the heart of this issue of being thankful, gets to the heart of this issue of having gratitude in our lives. And it's in Luke chapter 17, verse 11, that the story unfolds. It begins, sets the stage. He says, verse 11, now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. Sometimes Jesus would go through Samaria, which is a rare thing, but he's traveling along the border of Samaria and Galilee to get to Jerusalem. And just to kind of give you the geography of the land here, Galilee is where Jesus had home base, and Jerusalem is down south, and in between there's this section of Samaria. So it's like, you know, going from Everett to Tacoma, and then this big section we just call Seattle, right? And that's Samaria in this case. And so you didn't travel through Samaria because the Samaritans were unclean. They were what Jews considered to be a half-breed, a race that kind of followed their religion, but not perfectly, and so they were really looked down upon. And a lot of Jewish people called them dogs, and they were less than. And Jesus, of course, had a very revolutionary way in which he treated Samaritans. And so Jesus is traveling here close to Samaria. He's traveling down to Jerusalem. And it says, as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him, and they stood at a distance. And let me just unpack this for a second, because leprosy is a disease that actually many people know what leprosy is primarily through the scriptures. There's so many stories about leprous people. But it's a term that's really difficult to actually pin down, because a lot of people think that leprosy, at least the way that they're describing it here, was a general catch-all term for any skin disease that a person had. But they called it leprosy, and leprosy is a disease in which it's actually a bacteria that infects you, and it creates open sores in your skin. And a lot of people, they connect it with losing fingers and losing limbs and things like that. But actually, that's really not something that is common. What is common is that you would actually go blind, you'd have respiratory problems, your nerve endings would fail, and so you wouldn't be able to feel things that were happening in your body. So that's where maybe you might lose a limb or lose a finger or something like that due to infection. But it really wasn't because of the leprosy per se, it was because you had lost feeling. But anyways, leprosy still happens today, believe it or not. People can still get leprosy. It's contracted through, I don't even know how much detail you want to know here, but it's contracted through the air, bacteria. I read this statistic. This is just to prove to you that I don't just get up here and do sermons. I actually do some research, okay? So I read that armadillos can carry this bacteria. Isn't that interesting? So places where there are armadillos, you can catch leprosy. And so there's a fun fact for the morning. So you can share that with your family for Thanksgiving. You're welcome. Armadillos carry the disease of leprosy in them. So, but you can get cured through antibiotics, right? 6 months, 12 months of antibiotics, and you can get cured. And I'd read a statistic. There were 16 million people that have been recovered from having contracted leprosy in the last however many years because of the new research and the solutions that they've come up with, the antibiotics they've come up with. So it's really not something that affects the human race anymore, but it's a huge deal back then. And people were petrified of people who had leprosy. And so you would keep them at a distance. They would actually have bells that they would ring to warn people that they were coming. They had to wear a special kind of clothing, and people knew that they were leprous based on the clothing that they were wearing. They had to live outside of the general population. You couldn't be allowed in the temple to worship. You couldn't be allowed in Jerusalem, the city, at all, because people were so worried that they would contract the disease of leprosy. And so these guys are standing at a distance, as you would, right? And if you had leprosy, or else there's all sorts of problems that can be caused because of that. They could put you to death if you violate these societal rules. And so they call out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." And they're calling out to Jesus. They obviously have realized that this is him, and he has a reputation as being a healer. So in verse 14, it says, when he saw them, he said, "Go show to yourself to the priests." And Jesus is kind of yelling at them from a distance. He doesn't go over there because there were people with him and, well, you know, all the rules. And so he yells this at them. And it's an interesting thing to say, you know, go show yourselves to the priests. And so to understand a little bit of what's going on there, you need to know that for a person who had leprosy or for a person who had any sort of disease or malady that they were dealing with, in order for them to be given the all clear, like you're pure, you're clean, you're healed of this particular disease, they would have to go to a priest who would give them some sort of a checkout, you know, and he would check them over and, you know, he'd make them say, ah, you know, put the, I don't know, whatever he did. He just made sure that their skin was clean, made sure that they were no longer dealing with whatever it was that they may have contracted along the way. And once he gave them the all clear, they could re-enter society. Like they could come back and be with their families. And obviously this is a huge deal for a person who had leprosy because they were ostracized from society for so long. And it was such a catastrophic isolation that it was a huge deal for them to be able to get the all clear, right? And so Jesus is telling these guys, go show yourselves to the priest. Now, there's a couple of issues here. We don't know, for instance, how far the priest was away. Maybe he was just in the next village. Maybe it was the priest who kind of was the head of this particular village. Maybe they had to go all the way down to Jerusalem, which was probably a two-day journey by foot. And so I kind of think that he was telling them to go all the way down to Jerusalem for a number of reasons. First of all, I don't think a Samaritan priest would have been able to give the all clear with the authority that a priest from Jerusalem would. And so also later on in the story, you kind of reveal why I think that they had to go all the way down to Jerusalem. But for these guys, you know, the essence of this is that they had to go on a decent journey, you know, hours or days, but either way, they had to go on a trek. And it was an act of faith, right? For Jesus to say, hey, go and show yourselves to the priests. Like they had to actually do something that committed a great deal of time and energy for them to be able to go and complete that task. And it says this, and just this is kind of an aside, and I love the way that Luke presents this in such an, you know, non-dramatic way. It says, and as they went, they were cleansed. And man, there's a whole nother sermon there, right? In fact, it probably belongs in last week's theme of faith and expectation. It was as they went that they were healed. They hear this from Jesus, this thing that he requires them to do. And they're not healed yet. They had to respond in obedience to what Jesus asked them to do. Then they were healed. Right? Sometimes that's the way that faith works. Right? We take the first step, and it's in our obedience to what it is that Jesus is asking us that our healing comes, that our deliverance comes, that the door that opens up before us, it opens because of our step of faith. Don't forget that. Don't read over that. As they went, they were healed. They were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. And, you know, it's one that recognizes what happened. And I'm sure that all 10 were extremely excited and giving praise to God. But it was the one who came back. And he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. And we'll talk about why that's significant in a moment. But Jesus asked this question. This is the question I think that I just want to sit on for a moment. He says, we're not all 10 cleansed, and I don't think that Jesus is angry. I don't think he's bitter. I don't think he's suffering from, wow, they're so ungrateful. Right? But I think he was saying this with kind of a coy, you know, smile on his face, maybe a smirk. We're not all 10 cleansed. And then he says, where are the other nine? Where are the other nine? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? And then he said to them, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Where are the other nine? And maybe this is emblematic of just how difficult it is for us to express gratitude, that really maybe only 10% of us get it right often. But it's significant that it was the Samaritan, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But there's something that is incomplete, and Jesus recognizes that. He says, where are the other nine? So something has not completed itself. This process has not come to its conclusion. Where are the other nine? If something has been done for you, you ought to express it in a form of gratitude in order to complete the circle, right? In order to complete this cycle, this process. You know this because I think you remember the first time you came across an idea like this. It probably happened to you back in childhood. Just recently, we had Halloween, right? And all the kids coming to doors, and we actually don't get trick-or-treaters in our neighborhood. It must just not be one of those neighborhoods, if you know what I mean. So, but kids come to the door, right? And you can remember if you were a kid and you were allowed to trick-or-treat. I was kind of allowed a few times, but not really, because it was the devil's holiday. It was one of those kind of things. And so some people are allowed, right? So the kids go to the door. They knock on the door. Maybe they received, you know, two pieces of candy from somebody or a whole candy bar, right? That was the house you really wanted to find. But they knock on the door, they receive the candy, and usually the parents are off in the distance. And I can remember saying this to my kids when they were little, doing their trick-or-treating down at Olympic Manor. And we're standing behind them, and there's this question that you ask your kid in response to having received that candy. And I think everybody in this room knows what that question is. What do you say, right? And it doesn't matter how many houses you hit. The look of confusion on the kid's face, like, what do I say? Like, I wish this was Skittles and not a Milky Way. You know, I don't, what am I supposed to say? And we've always asked that question. We just ingrained it into their heads, you know, because as adults, we're just obsessively focused in on, we need our kids to say thanks. Because we need them to complete that circle of gratitude. Something is done. Somebody has done something for you. You owe them something in return. You owe them gratitude. You owe them a thank you. And so we say, what do you say? And we need to start asking this question of ourselves as adults. Like, we're so obsessed over our kids saying thank you. Well, can we be equally obsessive about us saying thank you? I mean, we almost panic when a kid doesn't say thank you in a situation in which they ought to say thank you. And so as adults, maybe we ought to take that obsessive focus on our kids saying thank you and turn it around on ourselves. Now, as we're all reading the story, we're incensed, right? Because how could these nine guys who were just miraculously healed by Jesus, just given their entire lives back, how could they be so ungrateful? How could they take what Jesus did for them for granted? Well, the reality is, if you go back in history to that moment in time, you track down one of these nine guys and you ask them, hey, Jesus just healed you. You know, what is your thoughts about that? I guarantee you that what they're saying, Jesus is the best. Jesus is amazing. Like, I'm so grateful. Praise God for what has happened to me. I'm sure they felt grateful. I'm sure in their heart of hearts, and you know, from the center of their being, they were so grateful for what Jesus had done. And so it's not as though they didn't feel grateful. They just didn't come back and actually thank him. They didn't express their gratitude. And so in that moment, Jesus is thinking to himself, where are the other nine who just blanked it out. You know, they just forgot, right? They just overlooked the fact that Jesus had done something incredible for them. And the problem is that the gratitude that they felt was never expressed, because going back to the point that we started with at the beginning, gratitude that is unexpressed is communicated as ingratitude. And so the key is the one who went back. The one who went back to thank the one who had enabled him to move forward in his life. He went back to thank the one who enabled him to move forward with his life. And this is the simplicity and the essence of gratitude. And I want you to grab a hold of this. I want to tell you a story about a book I was reading recently. And forgive me, I don't know a lot of the details because I was reading it. Well, I wasn't reading it technically. It was through Audible, right? And so I was getting it auditorially, and I don't remember details as well as when I read them in print. And so I probably need to go back to reading more books in print. It's so convenient, that Audible. But I was reading a book, and it was telling a story about a guy who had come across a study by a guy named Dr. Martin Seligman, I think is his name, or Seligman. Seligman is his name. And Dr. Martin Seligman is a happiness expert. And a lot of people have read things that he has produced in his studies. But one of the key things that he talks about when it comes to people feeling a sense of happiness is gratitude, the importance of gratitude, that we all must capture those feelings of gratitude and express them in some way. And so this guy was reading this study from Dr. Martin Seligman, and he had come to the end of his life. He was around 60 years old. He retired early. He'd been incredibly successful. He'd made millions of dollars. And he had come to this point in his life. It was a key point where he just recognized he wanted to express his gratitude. And he was reading some of these studies from Dr. Martin Seligman. And so Dr. Martin Seligman talks about a gratitude interview, he says, a gratitude appointment. And he talks about how you can do this in your life, that you would just meditate and focus and think about somebody who has made an impact in your life. And each and every one of us could do that right now. We could think about somebody who helped you along, somebody who encouraged you at just the right moment, somebody who helped get you through a difficult season in your life and inspired you. And all of us can find multiple people. And he sat down, and as a discipline, he had come up with 44 names, 44 people who had significant impact in his life. And so he proceeded to write them each a letter, about a 300-page letter, because that's what Dr. Seligman says to do. He says, make it detailed, right? A detailed 300-word. Thank you. Everybody, I heard Garth, who's a professor in college, go, what? 300 pages? 300 pages times 44. That's a lot of pages. My son could do the math. But so 300-word letter. So you're going into detail about all these things these people have done for you. You know, hey, you did this, you said this, you acted in courage, and this is what it did for me. Communicate what it did for you in response, and be detailed about the way that this person helped you along and how they helped you in that moment in which you needed them. And so he wrote all of those letters, but that wasn't enough. He had retired, and so he called it his year of gratitude, and he said, I'm going to go, and I'm going to travel to where each of these people are. And he flew around the country, you know, and took, you know, I mean, 44 people. So essentially, you know, every week of the year, he was on some sort of a trip. And he bought the person lunch, or he went out to coffee with them, and he read them this letter. And some of these people were in his life for just a speck of time. But their impact, you know, what they did for him was so incredible that he had to put them on the list. And so, you know, some of them he barely knew. Right? I mean, it was, you know, a boss who hired him, gave him his first job or whatever. It was that barista who smiled at him and just, you know, helped him through his day or whatever it was. You know, it was things like that. And so he had these interviews with each and every one of these people, and he thanked them. He said, there was not an interview that went by that there weren't tears in the person's eyes and tears in my eyes in response to this shared gratitude, this expression of, well, you really helped me. You really made an impact in my life. It was so beautiful. It was so wonderful. He said that it actually created a reaction where all of a sudden it was like a domino effect. All these people started doing this in their lives. And he said, After he was done with that year, he just felt like his life was complete. He felt that sense of completeness. You know, all these things that he'd done for me, he had returned the favor and the circle was completed. Right? Because that's essentially what gratitude really is. It's about completing that circle. And he talked about shortly after that when he was on a cruise with his wife and he fell ill. So when he got home, he checked into the hospital and the doctor had terrible news for him. He had contracted a rare form of cancer that could take his life. And so it was this moment of, you know, incredible fear and anxiety. It could produce that for certain. And he said he was at peace. He was at peace because everything that needed to be completed in his life had been done. Through this year of gratitude, he had talked through everybody. He talked to everyone who had made an impact in his life, everyone who he owed a thanks to. And he was able to share that with them. And he said, I was ready. I was ready for whatever came next because the gratitude had been expressed. Because this transaction between all these people in my life that God had placed in my life had been completed. And it was this beautiful thing. He actually ended up living. He was treated and the cancer was healed and he didn't die. But he said it was an incredible moment of peace just knowing everything that needed to get done was done. It was this beautiful thing. And so his gratitude was expressed and it completed this circle. But I want to come back to this idea of the Samaritan. I think that ingratitude, one of the reasons that we're ungrateful, and I just want to be honest with you this morning and maybe hit some of you up behind the head and be that pastor for a moment. So some of the reasons why we're ungrateful are not pleasant, right? Some of the reasons why we are ungrateful are that we have an inflated view of self. We're arrogant, that we feel as though we deserve something in life and that everything that has happened to us has been a result of, hey, you know, well, I hired them. You know, that's what they're hired to do, right? Or, well, that's my mom. That's what moms do. That's what they're supposed to do, right? Or it's just this sense of, you know, these people in my life are serving me because I'm so worthy of being served, right? And I know we don't say it that way, at least not to ourselves, right? But if you suffer from ingratitude, if there are people who regularly come up to you and say, I feel as though you're taking me for granted, maybe, right? Just present this as a maybe. Maybe you suffer from an inflated view of self, right? Well, I've created this for myself, or I deserve this, or, you know, that's just how good I am. But the Samaritan was the one that came back, and this is where I want to bring that back around. The Samaritan, he was a guy who felt as though he was less than. Right? And that's not a good thing, right, to have low self-esteem or whatever. But could it be that all the others that skipped over this important thank you, that they maybe had this sense in which, well, we're good Jewish people. God's just restoring us back to who we were meant to be, you know, or Jesus is a rabbi, you know, he does that for people who are faithful to God or whatever. But could it be that it was the Samaritan who recognized, well, I didn't even deserve this, you know? I mean, for God to have mercy on me, for God to grant me the grace to be among those who are healed by Jesus, I didn't even deserve this. And could it be that it was the Samaritan's sense of, wow, God have mercy on me, you know, a sinner, that enabled him to express his gratitude? And I'm not saying that we ought to see ourselves in a low light, you know, that we ought to throw away all of our self-esteem, right? But what I am saying is that the danger of an inflated view of self is that oftentimes our gratitude will go unexpressed because we don't recognize how important, and I think this is the key, that we would all recognize how important it was that so many people in our lives, a teacher, a family member, a parent, a coach, a mentor, a boss, a coworker, how many people has it taken to bring you to where you are in your life today? How many people can you point to and say, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have gotten this right in my life? Right? And all of us in this room, for certain, all of us in this room could point to multiple people, dozens of people who have been brought along our path who have helped take us a step further in life. And so I want to close by asking you a few questions, and then I want to give you one challenge. Okay, so question number one, and you can write these down if you want. I didn't put them up on the screen, but they're short questions. Who do you take for granted? Who do you take for granted? Usually it's a person that's very close to you, right? So no elbows here at this moment in the sermon. But who do you take for granted? Second question, who do you owe a debt of gratitude to? Who do you owe a debt of gratitude to? And as a hint, this is usually somebody from the past. Who do you owe a debt of gratitude to? I'm going to talk about how you can express that in a moment. Third question, who are you grateful for in your heart, but you've never expressed it with your mouth? Who are you grateful for in your heart, but you've never expressed it with your mouth? And here's my challenge. And this is something I want you to accomplish this Thanksgiving week. And I'm going to check up on you next week. Maybe. I'll check up on a few of you, all right? So I am going to check up on a few of you. So it might be you that I ask next week. So here's my challenge. I want you to, and I challenge you, and I'm going to do this myself, all right, to write three notes expressing thanks to somebody in your life. They don't have to be 300 pages. All right, I'll throw that out there. They don't have to be 300 words even. Just a thank you note. Write three notes of thank you and send them to somebody who has made a difference in your life, somebody who you owe a debt of gratitude to, and complete the circle. And as a way of getting you started, I have provided thank you notes out on the table as you leave. Across from the black box, there are three stacks of thank you notes. And as a way to get you started and help spur this, you can grab one of those notes. Don't grab three because I don't think I have enough for everybody. So grab one just to get you started. So if I ask you, you can at least say, well, I did that one. But write three notes of thank you. Thank somebody who you owe a gratitude debt to. Thank them. And maybe share it with them. One more thing I'll say. Some of you in this room, you're sitting next to the person who you need to express gratitude to, all right? And this is where it gets really sticky, especially for dudes, all right? Because if you're a dude in this room and you just heard the pastor say, hey, you ought to be grateful, you ought to be thankful, you ought to express your gratitude to this person, chances are you're going to say, well, that's true. I really do owe a debt of gratitude to this person. But I just heard that sermon, and they just heard the sermon, and so I'm going to just wait a couple of weeks, you know, so they can think it's my idea and not the pastor's idea in order for me to say thank you. Let me just get rid of that excuse. You can't use that one. You got to tell them today, all right? So tell them, be grateful, express your gratitude, express your thanks this Thanksgiving. And, man, I really think this can make a big difference for you and your relationships, and I hope that you take this challenge on. And, hey, maybe you even need to go on a year of gratitude, right? Maybe you don't have millions of dollars to travel around the world and do all that, but maybe you can write down, you know, 44 notes and send them in the mail. I think it would make a big impact for you and those in your life who have done so many great things for you. So let's pray and just pray that we have a great Thanksgiving week this week. Heavenly Father, we love you. We're so grateful for you and who you are in our lives. Our Heavenly Father who loves us. God, I know that I could say with every ounce of my being, God, where would I be if not for you, if not for your grace, if not for you meeting me when I was 16 years old and turning my life around? God, if not for grabbing a hold of me and calling me and challenging me to be the man of God that you wanted me to be. And God, I know that each and every person in this room could say that. Where would I be if not for your grace? And God, maybe we start there. And we recognize how meaningful our relationship with you is in our lives. And maybe we can recognize more fully then, God, the meaningful relationships of people that you have placed in our lives. It's a spouse, it's a mother, it's a father, it's a brother, it's a sister, it's a coworker, it's a close friend, it's a neighbor. Maybe it's just an acquaintance. Maybe it's a person from the past, a teacher, a coach, a mentor. God, whoever it is, I just pray that you would bring to our minds the people who need thanks the most. And God, out of this room, 3 note cards a person. God, maybe we can make a little bit of impact in this world. And maybe we could change the course of somebody's week this week. And maybe you could do a work in us that maybe helps us be a little bit more thankful this year. So God, we're grateful. We're grateful this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.